Thanks, Carla. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at rte.ie. Yesterday, Conor Pope had a call to action. He's trying to get an army together. People who will monitor scams and shrinkflation all over the place. Send it in to us and we will tell everybody. Anne Flynn has done just that. This is on scams. She says, there are two different messages I got within a month of each other. My friend almost got caught as her daughter was away with a similar thing. It's like they know where all of us are. I have a daughter away too. Thank you for the great job you're doing. That's to Connor, I suppose, the consumer superhero. So Anne's daughter's away and she got a text saying, hi, Mum and Dad. My SIM card is randomly blocked. This is my new phone number. Save this one. You can delete the old number. Text me back. Thank you. And then she got this one as well. Hi, Mum. I've dropped my phone and now it's broken. This is my new number for now. So you can save it and text me through WhatsApp when you see this, please. All part of a scam. Very clever, though. Very clever. And of course, all they have to do is hit the jackpot one out of every 1,000 times. So they send out thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of those texts. And most people are going, well, I don't have a daughter away. That means absolutely nothing to me. But for Anne and maybe your friend, they have a daughter away and it makes sense. And then they get involved and then they're scammed. So if you spot anything that you think other people should know about, let us know. ray@rte.ie 51551. Also yesterday, we were speaking to Naomi Parry. Naomi, close friend of the late Amy Winehouse, and she was her stylist as well. And she's part of the people who've created a lovely exhibition down at the Museum of Style Icons in Newbridge, County Kildare. It's adjacent to Newbridge Silverware. Amy Winehouse Exhibition. And it's in Aladdin's Cave of items and property. There's garments, there's lipstick, there's bath oil, there's little instruments that Amy would have used all there. And the exhibition runs until May. So if you're a fan of Amy Winehouse or you're just curious, it's the place to be. And the big news is that it's free, which is great. It's just that we were sort of rushing it yesterday evening because we had a problem with the phone line on the quiz. So we didn't have as much time with Naomi Parry as we would have liked. So we'll give that a mention again. I see the BBC have advised their staff to remove TikTok from their work phones. And this is on the back of people in Brussels been advised to do the same. Anyway, it's still providing loads of entertainment for loads of people all over the world. The most recent thing is a cat. Oh, yes. When was the last time a cat went viral? Well, probably Tuesday last week. But this particular cat has a singing voice, right? And the owner of the cat has accompanied him on piano. And now TikTok's gone mad, layering and layering and layering. And it's quite melodic. So this is the cat with just the piano. That's a cat. Yeah. You know what that cat needs, as well as the piano? It needs some backing vocals. It's nice, but it's missing something. I think a little bit of jazz drumming might just bring it all together. I know we mock TikTok, but that'll bring a smile to your face. Has the cat got an agent? I'm sure there are loads of cat puns there. 51551 for your cat puns this morning. Here's good news. More than 6 out of 10 taxpayers have never claimed a tax refund on their medical expenses, potentially missing out on hundreds of euro, a new survey has found. So they interviewed 1,200 people around the country. Just 37% of the respondents had claimed a tax refund on medical expenses. That means, yes, do the maths on it, 63% have failed to do so. Why? They were asked. Why don't you claim back what is rightfully yours? 43% of respondents said it was down to a lack of awareness. 27% said they feared ending up owing money. We have that fear of the tax man, don't we? And some 12% said the process is too time consuming or complex, couldn't be bothered, sort of thing. But you are entitled to claim tax back on medical expenses. So if you have those medical bills in the press, it's worth your while doing it. And you can do it all online now. To complete a tax return, you can create your own revenue My Account, and then you go in and put all the stuff in there, and it's doable. Or ask somebody who likes that sort of thing to do it for you. Colm O'Regan is writing in the Examiner today about cars before 1987. Now, I wouldn't have been able to put a year on it, but that was the year where we introduced the new registration plates. You know, with the number and the county and the year. That was introduced in 1987. Prior to that, and he writes a very funny article about it, it was all over the place and it was random and there were letters of the alphabet that didn't coincide with the first letter of a county, but it all made sense to somebody somewhere. But it got me thinking, like, my first car was 1985. I don't know when yours was. And I can't remember the reg number. Is that a thing that somebody would do, remember the registration number of the car? Because it must have been, it was pre-1987, so it must have been one of those old random numbers. It was a baby blue Toyota Starlet. Lovely little car. And then I was driving to work between Kildare and Newbridge one day, and there was black ice. And first of all, the lovely little car did a pirouette. Nice little pirouette in the middle of the road. Lovely on black ice. Yeah, it was quite artistic. And then it hit a bank and it did a bit of rock and rolling. Yeah, very musical car. And then ended up facing back towards Kildare, where I come from, as opposed to Newbridge. And Ian Dempsey was on the radio and, that was a bit of a... And myself, Philip beside me, not a scratch on us. But the car was a write-off. My poor little baby blue Toyota Starlet. Anyway, it's been golfs ever since. Anyway, any memories of your first car, get them into us, 515511@rte.ie. We interviewed Paris Hilton yesterday, and one of the things she spoke about was having ADHD, and we got a reaction to her calling ADHD her superpower. Some of it good, some of it bad. So we thought today that maybe we would talk to somebody with ADHD and discuss that a bit further, and that's coming up. So if you have any comments or questions about that, 515511 or ray@rte.ie. Ray, we got one saying we didn't pay the M50 toll. They even had the correct date. Yes, that's going around as well. E-flow ones, ignore them. I played along with the text messages. They requested a grand within three messages. I was not a sucker, says Gail. So that was on the I've lost my phone, this is my new phone number, text me now, from a daughter who was afar. It's clever though, isn't it? It's clever. It's time of the year. This time of the year, ladies and gentlemen, yes. Travel all around the sun. You know it's taken us. Ah, the dance of the cherry blossoms. Well done, everyone. Well done. On behalf of me and the cherry trees. Well. Great John Spillan and the Dance of the Cherry Trees. Did you know that it's a big deal? John spoke to us about this because he's travelled to Japan this time of the year, and it's a big deal in Japan, the blossoming of the cherry trees. And it's a wave up through the country because it's long, and obviously different climatic conditions would mean that the cherry blossom trees blossom. In the south, before they blossom in the north, they have an app. They have an app there now, and it monitors the blossoming of the trees, and it tells you where they're blossoming on a particular day, so you can arrive and get the photo opportunity and all that sort of thing, which is very clever. We must play that song in its entirety before the end of the show, and lots more to do as well. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first, a great song, Rag and Bowman, Human, on RT Radio 1. 6 years old, for your information, released in 2017. It won Song of the Year at the Brit Awards that year. Memories coming in of registrations from cars. This is the crack. So Liz in Cork, she says, Ford Fiesta Blue. The reg was 2701ZT. I used to be called Rosemary Smith, driving as the fan was so loud. She was the great woman, Rosemary Smith, the rally car driver. Way ahead of her time, being a woman in a male-dominated sport. So 2701ZT. Somebody else says, my parents' first car in 1960, a Beetle. That'd be a Volkswagen Beetle, ZN7621. Did you know our shed out the back when I was growing up was a box? Yes. And what box was it? It was a box for a Volkswagen Beetle, because back in the day they used to import cars and they weren't fully assembled and they came in wooden boxes. And if you were lucky enough, you'd be able to get one of those and make it into a shed. I don't know how it was got, where it was purchased, I've no idea, but it was in our back garden. Declan from Wicklow, light green Opel Corsa, three-door reg was 337ZW. What's with all these Zs? And actually, Colm Morrigan says that. He says there are a lot of Zeds everywhere. Was it Zipperary or Zarlo or Zilkenny? Hi Ray, my first car was a little white Renault 4. Remember the Renault 4 with the gear change on the dashboard? I bought it in 1976. It was a 3-year-old car, registration SZT392. Ask me the number of my car outside the door now and I'd have to go out and look. That's Nana Marion in County Clare. I can never remember. Ask me the registration. I've no idea what the registration of my car is. That's terrible. Angie in Kildare. How are you doing, Angie? Not my first car, but my sister's. It was 1991, a bright orange Mini. It had a hole in the floor like the Flintstones. I remember her driving us to Selbridge one February to collect bridesmaid dresses. When it was snowing, we had to stop in Clane and again in Strafford to dig the snow out of the car. That's a great memory. It really was a great car, apart from the hole in the floor. Yeah. We got our first car in 1988, silver Toyota Starlet. Ah, yes. We called her Nelly. Reg 197. There it is again. ZHI. The only Reg number I ever remembered. I don't even know Reg in my current car, says Patricia in County. So I underestimated people's memory for the registration of their first cars because they do. Somebody says that oh, yeah, there. 337ZW, which is actually the old county reg for Kildare, says somebody. Then you used to spot the new regs, you know, at the beginning of a new year. It's easy now because you just go 231 and then there'll be 232 in June. And we, myself and Tom, played that game. And I think I owe him a fiver because whoever sees it, you owe the other person a fiver if you see it first. And they see it as well. You can play that game. There you go. There's no copyright on it. Now, we're looking for two quizzers to come on after 4 o'clock and take part in our Who Done It quiz. Yep. Two quizzers and three Who Done It questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians, TV characters, anything that involves human endeavour. And like all Who Done It, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get two for a correct answer. With a clue, you get one for a correct answer, and there is a prize. And it's a two-night stay for two adults sharing at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel. Nice. It's part of their midweek escape to the sea package. It's an 18th century four-star luxury castle hotel located near the historic village of Dalkey. Only minutes from Killiney Beach in Dublin, with panoramic views over Dublin Bay and beyond. It's a family-owned and run hotel. It's in the third generation. Offers guests tranquility, breathtaking scenery and old-world elegance, which blends seamlessly with the hotel's modern luxury. FitzpatrickCastle.com, FitzpatrickCastle.com. So we're looking for two people after 4 o'clock. And here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. Irish girl band Bewitched are back. What was their big hit? C'est la vie or Say Goodbye? So what was Bewitched's big hit? C'est la vie or Say Goodbye? And they did a great performance of one of those songs on Comic Relief on Friday night. It was great, with Paddy McGuinness doing a bit of improvised Irish dancing. So Irish girl band Bewitched are back. What was their big hit? C'est la vie or Say Goodbye? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Jill has been on to 51551. She says, my mum asked me to tell you about her first car. 1965 Fiat 600, white in colour. Bought from Mike Murphy's father in Harold's Cross Garage for, wait for it, £267. £267. Veronica was the first one to drive out of the all girls in Born Abrina. Sorry, she was the first one to drive out of all the girls in Born Abrina. Kind regards, Jill. And of course, there's that famous, isn't there, that from Mike Murphy's show, The Hidden Camera Show, that he caught his dad out and his dad wasn't too pleased. It was a brilliant piece of television. I'm sure it's up on YouTube. Now, yesterday we spoke to Paris Hilton. She has a new book out. It's a memoir and it's very revealing. And we asked her about her diagnosis of ADHD. She was diagnosed in her early 20s. And I was asking her about her experience with ADHD.
Well, when I was a teenager, people were not talking about it. So I really had no idea why. But I just really couldn't concentrate in school. And it just was very difficult for me with everything, just memorizing things, being able to be responsible. And now I realize that if you can harness it in the correct way, it's actually a superpower. And we I feel like my whole career, I've really thought outside the box and have been an innovator and someone who takes risks. So I see it actually as a positive attribute now.
So there, she described her ADHD as a superpower. We had a big response to her description of ADHD. And some people commented on Paris's more privileged life. And here's a quote from one of them. She can afford the kind of accommodations that can make a life with ADHD, diagnosed or undiagnosed, not just manageable, but wonderful. Things like cleaners, chefs, chauffeurs and assistants help with executive functioning issues and give her an advantage most ADHDers will never have access to. So we want to learn more about ADHD in Ireland. So we got on to Claire Toomey. Claire was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult and she's now a certified ADHD coach who tries to help people with the neurodevelopmental disorder achieve their potential. And Claire is on the line. Good afternoon, Claire.
Hello, Ray. Glad to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for taking our call. It's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's ADHD. I believe that people in the ADHD community don't like the disorder part of it. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. There's deficit and disorder in the term. So it makes people feel broken and ill, right?
Right.
And researchers are actually talking about how it's not even accurate. So it's not that ADHDers experience a deficit of interest, they experience a dysregulation of interest. What their challenge is that they can pay attention to things that are really interesting or things that they're passionate about. And when environments, which we predominantly see in certain workplaces or schools, are not creating high enough stimulation or the ADHDer doesn't have interest in the topic, that's when the difficulties with paying attention tends to occur.
Ah, that's interesting. So if they're stimulated enough, everything's fine and rosy. However, if they're in any way bored, that's when the problems start.
To some extent,
to some extent.
So we don't want to gloss it all over because the challenges are absolutely real. But you're not wrong either. So like the issue with the challenge is a neurotransmitter called dopamine and norepinephrine. So they're responsible for motivation, pleasure, reward, alertness, memory and concentration. And in an ADHDer, we experienced lower levels and an imbalanced amount of levels of those. So that impacts our prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for paying attention, remembering things, organizing, feeling motivated and regulating our emotions. So when dopamine is naturally there, it is definitely easier for us to engage or partake in conversations or activities. And when it's not there, or when we don't have natural interest in something, that's when the challenges arise. And it can be really difficult for ADHDers to regulate this and figure it out.
I'm just trying to get my head around this. So is this another way of saying it then? So when you're buzzed up and your dopamine levels are up, it would appear that you're neurotypical.
I don't know if I'd say
no,
that you
wouldn't
appear
say that.
No, I wouldn't say that you become neurotypical, but
no, you appear to be. That's what I'm saying. Not to become neurotypical. Yes.
Yeah, you wouldn't experience the same challenges concentrating.
Yes, okay. No, because this is important because the environment of school is hugely important. If you are, and like that was Paris Hilton's story and a lot of other stories I've heard about ADHD is that school doesn't fit at all. And if you're not diagnosed, then you appear to be acting out or bold or not paying attention. All of those labels, which are all very negative.
Exactly right. And the tricky thing with school is, and why we're seeing so many women like Paris, like myself and men being diagnosed in later life is because some aspects of school people could excel in. So if someone had, like I work with younger clients doing their Leaving Cert, and some of them might love science and their grades in science are insane. But when it comes to maths class, they're getting into trouble with the teacher or they're not liking the environment and their grades aren't great. Other students will have a variation in like success rates or participation in relation to sports versus academia, right? So some of them might excel in the sports world, whereas the classroom environment will be more negative. And this is why sometimes, because our perception of it in Ireland is that it's the bold, not concentrating, hyperactive usually a male or a boy, you know, running around the room giving the teacher lip, which is why it goes unnoticed.
Okay, and yeah, you're saying typically people think of it as a boy, and is it because girls and young women have a way of masking ADHD, and what is that?
Yeah, so boys and men tend to be more external and outspoken, and their reactions might be, you know, feeling frustrated. We might notice aggression more.
Okay.
Whereas girls tend to be a little bit softer, quieter, will daydream more, stare out the window, will tend to, you know, mask and hide things and come up with coping mechanisms such as talking too much or daydreaming. And we tend to just put those things down as things that girls do anyway.
Uh-huh.
So therefore, it's not picked up.
So talk to me a little bit about your experience then in school.
Mm-hmm. My mom used to always say to me, she always thought I was bored, okay? Mm. Academically, I struggled throughout my entire experience. But when I went into secondary school, you know, I got heavily involved in sports. I was on the student council. I was head girl. So it kind of pulled me through. But my grades never matched up to expectations set by myself or by my teachers. And this massively impacted my confidence and my self-worth. But things didn't really fall apart for me, Ray, until I went into college. And that's when I started to develop, you know, I experienced a lot of overwhelm and shame around grades. And I had I had failed some exams. I had to repeat the year. And then my mental health greatly deteriorated. So it wasn't until I was 28 years of age when I kind of went, okay, I'm going to go looking at ADHD. And it was at that time my mom said, when you were in primary school, I thought of this, but we were told there's no way it could have been ADHD.
So when you were 28, why did you pick ADHD out of the air?
Because I had what I had noticed, now that I was in a better place, I had gone to therapy and I had done a lot of work on myself, but I could still notice things like my emotional regulation, my ability to concentrate in conversations, and I still experienced a lot of pain because of my, you know, failed college experiences.
Okay.
And it was when I was speaking about those things that my mom had said, you know, I thought ADHD at the time when you were in school. And I took to Google like what everybody else does. And obviously it wasn't back then what it is now, that we have all the information that we have now. But I could see myself in the descriptions, and I went to my GP and asked for an assessment and walked away that day being told, yes, I had ADHD.
And you see, the problem is if you're not diagnosed, then you go through life as you did up until you were 28, think there was something wrong, it affected your mental health.
Yeah.
Whereas if you had a diagnosis earlier on, you would have been able to act accordingly, and you would have been able to explain things away through ADHD.
Yeah, so I definitely say that, you know, me getting diagnosed has transformed my life. I've returned to college 3 times since. Now I work solely with ADHDers, and I love my life and I love myself. Some people, Ray, don't go down the diagnosis route or can't because of the constraints or the challenges that they're faced with in trying to obtain one. But what I say is, after knowing the diagnosis, then I knew how my brain worked, and then I knew how I could live. So I had to go figure out, like I talk about with my clients, how when we were born and in our early years environments, we're learning how to process, how to regulate, how to solve a maths problem, all from people who are neurotypical, right? Or other people who don't know they're neurodivergent either. So we're trying to do things that work for neurotypicals.
Yeah.
So the best thing that I did for myself was, you know, take some time and think about and learn about ADHD and why my brain worked the way that it did, and how could I work alongside it instead of focusing on weaknesses and, you know, highlighting strengths and leading from strengths.
Yeah, of course, like, for example, we live in a right-handed world. So if you're left-handed, it's a challenge.
Yes.
And we live in a world designed by, I suppose, in the main, neurotypical people. So if you're not neurotypical, then that's a challenge. I'm just wondering, just to take, because I read Paris Hilton's book and I watched the documentary. And I, she, for example, and these may not be related, but they could be. She's always late. And when we got a look into her world, it's quite messy, hectic, all over the place, you know. And that what somebody said there, you know, it's she would have cleaners, chefs, chauffeurs and assistants. They help with executive functioning issues. that give her an advantage over most ADHDers. So would you explain that to me?
Yeah, so executive functioning challenges are things like planning, organising, prioritising, regulating our emotions, and the chemicals I mentioned earlier, norepinephrine and dopamine, they impact that, right? Now, the other thing I want to say is no two ADHDers are the same, right? Yeah. So everybody has their own individual interests, which impacts the places where they can get motivated and stimulated. And then they'll have different levels of strengths, right? So I know I have some clients, and I know, like, I used to work in fashion. I loved the buzz and the chaos because I actually could switch on, you know, hyper-focus mode. But there's a cost to that, right? There's a come down off that. And then other clients won't be able to, or not clients particularly, but other ADHDers would hate that kind of lifestyle and would need something more structured or more routine-y. So it varies based on individual people. But what that person is saying is massively true in terms of the types of supports that Paris would have. And, you know, she mentioned the word superpower, and, you know, I like to use the word, it was actually framed like this in the movie The Disruptors, where they talk about it as a super skill set, right? Because not all of it is a positive experience, and it's not a positive experience 24 hours a day. And of course, in Ireland right now, you know, the HSC are doing a lot of work to try and increase the level of services. But like, we had an influx in people, I certainly did, and I know other professionals working in this area, an influx of people going, okay, wait a minute, all these little struggles that I had when I was in primary school are coming back now. Because people were catapulted into their homes during the pandemic, and their structures and their routines were pulled away from them. So they were realizing, you know, actually this is still here. And of course, because children are being diagnosed earlier, people are more aware of it too.
So and we do this, a lot of us do this, we allow our work schedule and our work life to absorb our idiosyncrasies, whether it's ADHD or whatever it might be. So you're saying that when that was taken away from people and they didn't have, you know, the ability to be hyper at one part of the day or whatever it was, and they were at home on their own, that ADHD came to the forefront again. Is that it?
So if you think about like what we get when we go into a workplace, right, we've got accountability, we've got deadlines, we've got body doubling, we've got commotion, we've got breaks, we've got structure, and we've got managers guiding us and supporting us, right? So when we left those spaces, we didn't have that structure, right? So there was nobody there to motivate us, to set time deadlines. Like, it was all very much self-led. And what happens is, like, in schools and college, to some extent, we're still on someone else's timetable. And most of us will go into a profession that we've chosen or have some sort of interest in. So there's already motivation there. Right. And then, of course, there's less boredom because there's loads going on. Now, that's not to say that some people don't experience open plan offices being too distracting or overwhelming. They certainly do. But things like Ray, the fact of, you know, being in the office at 9, right? Like, when you're at home and I used to notice this a lot with clients when there was nobody checking whether they were starting at 9. It was very, very hard to be motivated to be on their laptop at 9 o'clock, right, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Now, we spoke to Brianna Parkins, who was diagnosed as an adult with ADHD as well. And she was talking about the lack of services, which you've alluded to already. But she was saying it's very difficult to get a diagnosis in Ireland.
Yeah. Currently, there's a minimum 2-year wait list.
What?
And we're also catching up on ourselves, right? So, like, my training is from New York in the US, and our professionals here are not getting a lot of training, and they haven't been for years. So our GPs are not being trained, our teachers are not being trained. So it makes it very difficult when somebody thinks, oh, this could be it. And then they, you know, they first reach out or seek support or, you know, information on it. And then, of course, the next step, right, like to getting an assessment, there's definitely more in the last 2 years than there was previously, but it is incredibly difficult. The waiting lists are long and it's costly, right? Like, the lowest price point I've heard is around €650, and people don't have that. And especially, Ryan or Ray, what I see a lot of is, Sorry, Ray.
No, that's fine.
I see a lot
I've been
of...
called Eamon Dunphy, Ray Tracy, Ray Bourke, Ian Dempsey. Go on.
What I see a lot of, I've got my train of thought now. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. People start to doubt themselves, right? And, you know, they'll first identify, they'll notice the challenges, they'll think it's relevant. And then they might go to someone who's not educated or not, you know, up to date with recent research. And they say, don't be ridiculous. You don't have ADHD. And then someone will go off and not proceed with the diagnosis.
You're a coach and you've been diagnosed yourself. So what do you recommend to people who may think that they could have ADHD?
The first thing I tell people to do is if you go online, there's a few on my blog, on my website, and you carry out some self-report scales or self-assessment screening tools, and they'll give you a really good indicator of maybe the characteristics or the symptoms that you're presenting with, and it'll help you to advocate for yourself. Then I advise people to go to their GP. Most services will require a GP referral. Some will allow you to make a self-referral. I always recommend doing a bit of research yourself first and just knowing who is in your area that works in ADHD or can carry out assessments. And it also helps to have that information when you're going into your GP, and then they'll pass you on for an assessment. OK, and the other side of that is, like, if you want to go down the medication route, you must be diagnosed and you must be diagnosed by a psychiatrist. But there's a lot of work that people can do themselves. It's difficult. It's not easy work for sure, because we've got it. We've been masking. Like, I was 28, so I was, you know, behaving the way that I was behaving for 28 years. But there's a lot of learning and reading and rewiring and reframing that we can do ourselves in the space of coach or friends, or I know there's a couple of CBT therapists that are working with ADHDers as well.
Okay. And if people put in Claire Toomey ADHD, they'll find you, will they, Claire?
Yeah. So my website is internalconnections.ie.
Internalconnections.ie. Claire, I'm sure we'll talk again. Thanks so much for talking to us today. That's Claire Toomey, ADHD coach. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, joining me in studio is playwright and actor Shane O'Reilly. O'Reilly? No, O'Reilly. And he's going to tell us about his hilarious new musical celebrating the power of family, friends and a fish.
Yes.
Gold in the Water, Shane. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So this is your, what, second, third, fourth play? Musical?
It's my first musical, that's for sure. Yeah. But I've written a number of plays over the years. Started out with a show called Follow, which told the story of growing up with deaf parents, and I performed it as well, both in sign language and speaking in English, because I was really keen to make something that would allow my family an opportunity to come and watch a show without any kind of interpretation.
Because both your parents are deaf.
Yes, that's right, Jen.
So it's you're a coda.
Yes, yes, I am. A proud
child
coda.
Of deaf adults.
Absolutely.
That's it, coda. And the movie, of course, has brought your story to a global audience. Not in your story in particular, but...
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the word coda even, you know, people immediately understand it now, whereas...
Yes.
For years, you would have to explain what... I mean, I also only learned it as an adult. I didn't know I was a coda until somebody told me I was a coda.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people understand what it
so
is now.
So Follow was 2010.
That's right, yeah.
And this musical, Gold in the Water, has been sort of been in your head for how many years?
Since 2015.
Right.
So 8 years. And generally, musicals do take a long time. There's a lot of ingredients. You've got to come up with a story and then start to write it and work with a composer. Our composer, Dennis Clossy, has been working with me for all that time. And so it takes a lot of gestation and moving around. But yeah, after a long 8 year road, we're here and it's on, and it's incredible. The response are phenomenal.
Okay, so it's there's a goldfish involved.
Yes, there is.
Right, and there's a couple, a gay couple.
Yes.
Right, go on.
So the story is about Bart and Harvey, and they are celebrating their first year of being married. And the day after their big celebration with all their pals, they open their front door and a mysterious goldfish has arrived from out of the cosmos.
You have me.
Yeah. So you can tell it's a hard-hitting, serious drama. No, it's a joyful comedy that explores the unexpected. What do we do when something completely out of the blue arrives into our lives, how do we react? And Bart and Harvey both have very different reactions that neither of them expected. So the show is this kind of rip-roaring comedy that explores care and parenting and the idea of responsibility for something that's vulnerable. And we encounter a pet shop owner who is very righteous and very traditional and very serious in her approach to pet care, who kind of turns Bart and Harvey's worlds upside down.
And how does she feel about a gay couple having a goldfish?
Well, she doesn't care if they're gay or straight. That's no bother to her. Right. What she cares about is whether or not they're following the rules.
Uh-huh.
And so she sends Harvey, who's not the brightest spark in the world, back to his husband Bart with a list of instructions and things to follow, like goldfish cannot go into goldfish bowls, they must be in a tank. But of course, in the first 10 minutes of arriving home, the tank gets smashed, there's a burst in the bag, everything's going wrong, and the goldfish ends up exactly in the scenario that it was never supposed to be.
So how does it explore different permutations of family then?
So they're surrounded by a kind of community of their friends, and also Bart's mother is in the show. They have a couple who have been trying very hard to get pregnant for years, have gone through IVF and multiple routes, and instead of getting one baby, they had quadruplets, so they have four. And so they have been landed with the unexpected arrival of four new babies, and their life is turned upside down. They have a pal called Deirdre, who's a children's entertainer, who doesn't really know who she is. One day she's a carrot, the next day she's a pencil, then she's a weather system, and she's in pursuit of who she might be. And then Bart and his mother have this really beautiful moment in the second act where they look back at Bart's childhood and what it meant for him growing up as a little gay kid, and how his own father responded to him. So we kind of look at parenting from a multiple kind of angle approach.
So you drew on your own experience for that.
Well, now, my father was absolutely wonderful to me, so I don't have that experience, but I certainly did draw on what it felt like growing up as a kid that just wanted to tell the world and show the world exactly who you were, but the world just wasn't quite ready for that yet. And so one of the joys of this show is that our audiences of adults and children are coming in to see this show and are just absolutely reveling in the beauty of the expression, the fabulosity, the crack.
Is that a real word?
It is now. If I wrote it down, then it is.
Yeah, so you're saying 7 years in the making. What like, it's about the songs, really, I always think, with a musical. You have to be humming a couple of the songs a few days later.
Absolutely. And I mean, the response to this show in terms of the music has just been astonishing. People are texting me saying, I cannot get the songs out of my head.
Right.
Dennis Klossy has created the most amazing suite of 17 brand new musical numbers. And a lot of them are real comedy kind of explosions of joy. There's one song in the second act that we find it very hard to get the audience to stop clapping in order to let the play happen. And then there's some really, really beautiful references to Sondheim and to some more contemporary musical theatre, a little bit of Matilda in there as well. So it moves through a kind of a gorgeous range of musical numbers, all played by a live band on stage and sung by our 8 fantastic cast members.
Well, congratulations on just writing a musical. That's an amazing achievement, isn't it?
I tell you, when I started out, I had some excellent mentorship and support, and everybody was trying to tell me how difficult and complex it is to write a musical. And I kept thinking, this can't be that difficult. And all these people are just blowing this out of proportion. Well, I tell you, in January when we started rehearsals, I couldn't believe the amount of work it had taken.
And what's the biggest challenge? Is it to get the songs to fit seamlessly, or?
Well, the thing about a musical that we learned was that they only really exist when they're in front of an audience. So because it's a mixture between music, performance, dance, and a book, a story, you can't read it on the page. You're reading lyrics, and they don't do what they're doing when they're sung.
Yeah.
You can't just sit and listen to it on a radio, because you need to see it. So the actual thing you've been creating only turns up when all the ingredients come together.
So is that the genius of somebody like Lloyd Webber? He can see all this in his head, can he? Is that?
I mean, these people are absolute geniuses. I also think that there's structures that existed, they, you know, in the US and in the UK where they go out of town, it's what it's called.
Uh-huh.
So they might go to Boston and they'll be there for 6 months previewing a show.
I remember talking to that, that the famous musical producer, what's his name? Oh God, it'll come to me. But that, I think he was the first guy to do that in the UK.
Yes.
So you give it a chance to...
Well, because essentially you're drafting. So that's, I was saying, when it's live and in front of you and the audience is responding to it, I got great advice to sit in amongst the people and listen to how they're responding to the show and listen to when they're leaning forward, listen to when they're roaring. David Mamet always says you can't fake a laugh and you can't fake a gasp. And so when you hear an audience gasp and laugh, you're like, okay, that's working. That's ticking along.
So Follow was very much written with your parents in mind.
Yes.
And how will they get to experience Gold in the Water?
So Amanda Coogan, my Coda sister, as I call her, is going to interpret the show tomorrow night. And Amanda has interpreted an awful lot of the work that I have made over the years and also has performed in my work. And so tomorrow night she will be incorporated into the musical, and we have my mum and dad and a lot of their pals and some of the deaf community are going to come along to Project Arts Centre tomorrow night for that one-off performance, one-off signed performance.
And I know you've spoken about Coda, the movie, before, but an amazing movie, like... Was it a revelation to you? Did you know it was coming? Because we just happened upon it at home by accident before the Oscars.
Yeah, it was kind of like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it was this kind of dark horse.
Yeah,
I didn't know anything about it until it was, and it was in the lockdown, right? So, I mean, all we did was sit in front of our televisions.
Was that Apple Plus?
Yeah, that's right. And my partner and I watched it, and I kind of had this strange experience of watching a film that was tapping into an enormous amount of my experiences that I'd never seen before. I'd never seen what it was like for a child of deaf adults.
You'd lived it.
I'd lived it, yeah. But I'd never watched somebody show it back to me. And there's also, you know, it's a Coda experience. I think it's representative of that writer and that team. And I think that the Irish Coda experience is a story that I think still needs to be told. It's really interesting, the journey that the deaf community have gone on in Ireland over the last 30 or 40 years. From, you know, a point where there was a kind of a very close-minded attitude to what deafness was and who deaf people were, and an assumption based on how they presented in the world of what they were capable of. And the movement through to the Irish Sign Language Bill and the recognition of that most beautiful language as one of our national languages has really changed how we think about our deaf citizens. And for me, as a Coda, watching my parents go from the 1980s into now, the, you know, 2023, and the difference in terms of what mobile phones have done, it allows them to communicate in an immediate sense. We used to sit in front of a fax machine for 3 minutes as a message that was written would like spill out. And before that, it was mini comms. And then before that, again, it was just in person, people meeting in the deaf club in Cabra. And that might be the only time you'd get to catch up with your pals in person for a couple of weeks or a month, you know.
I think maybe fear is the wrong word, but people were cagey around people who were deaf. They didn't know how to behave around them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that because it's very confronting. You know, I always think of it like it's like an amplified version of meeting someone who doesn't speak the same language as you. So there's an immediate discomfort because there's a communication barrier. And I think also when you're within a society that isn't celebrating the fact that deafness and that kind of difference is something to lean into, there was always an immediate kind of friction. And certainly as a young boy with my mom, I'm the oldest child, so I did an awful lot of interpreting from a very young age and kind of really saw how adults were responding to my parents and how quickly they would kind of reveal themselves, how quickly the mask would slip. And I don't apply any judgment to that. I think people get nervous.
Yes.
And so I used to always encourage people to just wait. It will happen. You will communicate. You will figure out. Just take the timer off the table and allow the space. Make eye contact. Smile. Smiling really helps.
So that's why you smile a lot. That's where the smile comes from.
Yeah. it's been a real journey. But I say it every time. I am incredibly proud of my parents and of being a coda. And I don't think I would look at the world the way I do if they hadn't shown it to me like that. Mm. So I'm very grateful.
And your view of the world is evident in Gold in the Water, a new musical about family, friends and a fish. And it's running until Sunday, March 26th at the Project Arts Centre in Dublin. And tomorrow it'll be signed. Tomorrow
That's right. Yeah. Signed.
What's the lady's name again? Sorry.
Amanda Coogan.
Amanda Coogan.
Yeah, you might recognise her from the Late Late Toy Show. She signs that every year and creates a huge stir. She is phenomenal.
Great. Lovely to meet you, Shane, and good luck with the rest of the run.
You too. Thank
sure
you
we'll
so
talk
much.
Again. Take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now everybody wants to tell us about the registration of the first cars. Westmead registrations were all LIs. We had quite a few starting with BLI. As far as I can remember, they replaced the registrations with the letter Z. All Irish cars had registration ending in the letter I. When I worked in Belfast in the mid-70s, my car had the registration POI. Belfast had OI, and we were all amused that the next one would be ROI, Republic of Ireland, which to an ordinary person would be Republic of Ireland, says Isabel. Yes. My late father knew where all the registers were from, as did Conor Regan's dad. We thought it was bizarre. IE was County Clare. Not sure how I remember that, says Maeve. Excuse me. And I had a white Renault 5 with a choke. The last three digits of the reg were 501. And at the time, Levi's 501 were the big thing to wear. So, of course, my car was called Levi, Orla in Dunleary. Remember the 501s? They were the more expensive Levi's, weren't they? I think they were a baggier fit or something like that. Did they have the white label or the red label? Answers, please, on postcards to the Ray Darcy Show, Donnybrook Dublin 4. Brendan Fahey, Ballinasloe. My first vehicle was a small scooter, RIM 980. Bought for £40 in 1965. A farmer in Clare had EIEI10. Was he a MacDonald? Yeah, I don't know if that's a makey-uppy. Sounds like a makey-uppy to me. Hello. Hello yourself. Just heard you mention car registrations in Ireland as being at random. Looking at the early ones, it might give that impression. Oh, now here's Sean McAvoy. He knows what he's talking about. In 1904, Ireland, along with the UK, passed a law that all road-going motorised vehicles had to be registered to the owner and carry a number plate. In the UK, they used the letters of the alphabet for all of Ireland, the 32 counties. They decided to use the letter I for Ireland, a letter of the alphabet, for example, Antrim, IA. For me, it was AI. They used the letter of the alphabet either side of the letter I for the rest of Ireland. Does that make any sense to anybody? No. No, it's complicated, Sean. I'm going to do some research tonight and I'll come back tomorrow. Just like Pythagoras' theorem, I'll have it all sorted out. I had three, these are scams. We were talking about scams earlier on as well. Eamon has been on. He says, I've had three scam attempts when selling different items on Dundeal. Different buyers sent me a link to Unpost where they said a service was provided where a buyer sends money and cost of postage to Unpost who then pay total to your credit card and arrange collection. Very believable. But thankfully, I saw it as a scam, says Eamon. Be ever vigilant out there. Be ever vigilant because there's so many scams out there and they're very sophisticated and they're very bright and they have people who know how to work the old social media and computers working on their behalf. So be careful. Now, in Ishtoshi now in the Prevscale to Anoak de la Marion ni Hulawan. Gormaga Marion, thank you very much. 515514@rte.ie. Yeah, I suppose it is a big thing. Your first car, it is a big thing. Michael has been on. He says, my first car was a Mini with a Cork reg. Even though it was bought in Dublin, not born in Dublin, worked whilst in secondary school in local supermarket and bar to raise the money. Mini Reg CZ, there it is again, B177. And yes, it also had a hole in the floor with sloppy gearbox and none or virtually no synchro mesh to change gears, but did manage to travel to places such as Galway, Kerry and Donegal at age 17. Took a while, but got there, says Mick. Michael, I was going to buy a Renault 4 when I was about 19 or 20. I had the money from the bank and everything. I think it was £400. And then I got a man. That's what you used to do. You have to get a man who was qualified, and he'd go and he'd sit into the car and maybe do a test drive because they were all secondhand at that time. And he copped that the change of the gear stick didn't match the body. So the engine wasn't the original engine. And then when he did a bit of an investigation, it was a dud engine. And luckily, he saved me a lot of hassle and £400. So I waited for another 4 years to buy the little Starlet. Now, the quiz. The whodunit quiz. Yes. Two quizzers standing by, and we have three questions for them and a prize for the eventual winner, which is a two-night stay for two people sharing at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel. And it's in Killiney up there. Loads of things to do. Of course, you could pop into the city, but if you don't want to do that, you can visit Dalkey, which is just minutes away, or Killiney Beach, go for a walk, and then you have the lovely panoramic views over Dublin Bay. It's a family-run hotel, third generation of the Fitzpatrick's. Breathtaking scenery, old-world elegance. FitzpatrickCastle.com. FitzpatrickCastle.com for all information. Hello, Michael Dunbar.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm not too bad. you were going to go out walking, and then what happened?
It just started to rain, and I'm afraid it's still raining here, Ray, in the sunny southeast, unfortunately.
Whereabouts in Wexford are you, Michael?
Just outside Enniscorthy, Ray. I'm originally from Ferns, which is just outside Enniscorthy
yes,
as well. Yeah,
I know where Ferns... Historic Ferns, isn't that it?
Historic Ferns, that's it, yeah.
Why is it referred to as Historic Ferns, Michael?
Well, because you've got, you know, you've a castle, an abbey, there's an old St. Peter's Church there.
Right.
There's actually a kind of a historic walking route around the town.
So there's a lot of history. That's why it's called Historic
Ferns.
There's
a lot of history, a lot of history.
Okay.
Yeah. So, MacMurray, et cetera. Yeah.
Right. Now that you can't walk, what are you going to do?
I'm just going to sit in, I'm afraid, for the afternoon.
Right.
And then I have to, I think, go for a drive somewhere later, all right.
Yeah,
little thing to do.
So you're a principal in a school for special needs.
That's right, I was, yeah. I'm retired now for 9 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, but I was. I worked all my life, for about 35 years, in the same school, St. Patrick's in Enniscorthy, yeah.
Right.
That's where I was employed.
And how's retirement going?
I love it, Ray, yeah. I absolutely love it. I love every day of it. It's not all Shangri-La, but it's great.
Yeah.
You have your own time to do your own things.
Right, and you're very involved with amateur dramatics.
That's right, yeah. I've been involved and interested in drama all my life, and since I retired, I'm sort of tried to get involved with as many groups as I can around the county in different ways, yeah.
Yeah, and do you act or direct, or what do you do?
Both, yeah, right. Both. I direct the musical at Carnegie Musical Society almost every year for quite a number of years, and I've acted then with the Enniscorthy Theatre Group in years gone by, Kilrush Theatre Group,
right.
Drama Group, you know, they're all nearby here in the area.
What would be your favourite?
Various other groups.
What would be your favourite musical, Michael?
Oh, that's a good. I'd say Jesus Christ Superstar is certainly up there,
yes,
and I loved.
Yes.
And I must say, I was totally blown away. I saw Hamilton a few years ago in London and loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Have you seen Matilda the musical, the movie?
I have. I've seen the musical and the film and the musical. Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
super.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And,
super.
And you're going up to see Shane's musical tomorrow, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, my son and I are going to see that. Just coincidentally, going to see it tomorrow. Yeah, I love going to the theatre and I go as often as I can.
That is a coincidence, isn't it? That is a coincidence.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
Ireland's
absolutely.
Tiny.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, you're up against Roisin Preston. He is in Killiney. You won't have to go far if you win, Roisin.
Hi Ray, how are you?
You could walk.
I could. I learned how to swim up in the inclined castle.
Did you?
I did, yeah. Yeah, when I was a kid, I went swimming lessons there for years, but I've never actually stayed the night, so.
Have you not?
No, so it'd be nice to see what the rooms are like.
Look, if you forgot something, you could just walk home and get it. You know, I forgot my book.
The food and everything is fabulous up there.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
So
it's a nice little prize there for
FitzpatrickCastle.com.
Yeah. What are you up to today, Roisin?
I work from home, so I was working until this afternoon.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then
what
I'm
do you
just
do?
Kind of pottering. I'm a bookkeeper for a local pet shop in Glenageary. They're kind of their ethos is the health and well-being of the animal themselves. So like if you're a dog or whatever is allergic to wheat or anything like that, like we'll have food.
Right.
That they'll be able to eat and help them. And
the
girls are fantastic. Like, you can bring your animal in to get fitted for harnesses and leads, and we'll give you advice on training and all that. So, yeah.
What's fantastic. The name of the shop?
It's Nature and Nurture Pet Store.
Okay.
It's Glenageary Roundabout.
Okay, just we might as well give it a plug. And did you say you're going potting now or no? What are you
no,
doing?
No, pottering.
Oh,
I
pottering.
Have been
pottering. Sorry,
sorry. Just pottering. No, I finished up about work about half three, so okay. I've just been pottering since
pottering,
then.
Right. Not potting. Just pottering.
Not potting, no.
Okay, right. No, fine. No. Okay, you know the deal, both of you, Roisin and Michael. So it's three questions. I give you the category, and then you decide if you want to go for a clue or not. If you go for a clue, you get a point for a correct answer. Without a clue, it's 2 points for a correct answer. Whoever gets the most points is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tie break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Okay, good luck.
Good luck, Roisin.
Right.
Good luck, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Michael, so music is category number one. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll go without a clue, Ray, Chancellor. Yeah.
Yeah, you have an interest in music, so probably the thing to do. So for two, Michael, who is this?
London calling to the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is bitten the dust.
Who's that?
The Clash.
It is The Clash. Well done, 2 points. Yes, great song, great band. Roisin, music.
Okay, no clue, right?
No clue. Okay, for two, who is this?
Stop dreaming of the choir.
Well,
I know the song, but
yes.
I can't think of who sings it.
No, not there, no. The clue was this band launched the career of Paul Weller. Would that have helped? No.
No.
The Jam.
Okay, I wouldn't have got that.
He was the front man, probably before your time.
Probably.
Yeah, probably before your time. Okay. Town Paul Malice. Right. Okay. Michael, you're in front, but still 2 questions each to go. Second question is on TV characters. Michael, what do you want to do? Do you want to take a clue or not?
No, I'll chance it again, Ray.
Okay.
If I can.
And remember, it's the TV character, not the actor. So for 2 points, which TV character is this?
You dye your meth with food coloring to make it look like mine. You already ape my product at every turn. A better high means customers pay more. A higher purity means a greater yield. That's $130 million of profit.
Well?
I think it's the character from... I just can't think of his name. It's from...
Yeah,
no, I can't.
Yeah, you're going to say it's from Breaking Bad. And it's Walter White. No points there. It was there or thereabouts. Right, so you're on two still, Michael. Roisin, a chance for you to go... to go even.
No clue, yeah.
TV characters, do you want to take a clue or not?
No clue, no.
No clue, okay. And remember, it's the TV character, not the actor. So for 2 points, which TV character is this?
The molecular biologist will tell you that 98% of our genes are identical to those of monkeys. Less than 2% are specifically human. So why do I wake up craving for a fag and not a banana?
Any idea?
Oh, this is terrible. No, I have no clue.
No.
No.
That's Onslow from Keeping Up Appearances. You know, he was Mrs. Bouquet's brother-in-law.
Yeah. No,
you know, always went around in a vest.
I know the character.
You know the character.
I
can
always get these all right, and now I can't get any right with them on.
You're not out of it yet.
Okay.
You yet have to score. Michael, you're on two. So, Michael, if you get anything from this, you're today's winner. However,
okay.
if you don't get anything from it and Roisin goes for no clue and gets it right, we're in a tie-break situation. So what do you want to do?
I'll take a clue on this one then, Ray.
Yes, that's probably the wise thing to do. Irish Voices is the category. Here's the clue. We used to catch her at 9 o'clock. We used to catch her at 9 o'clock for 1 point. And to be the winner today, who is this?
Medics can be confounded. I always remember my mother being amused and saying to this strapping and robust creature she had produced, the doctor always said you'd be delicate. Delicate was a great word when I was a child. It didn't mean that you would, you know, do embroidery and tatting and be ladylike. It meant that you would probably take the odd bowl of gruel and be ill.
Who's that?
Anne Doyle.
Yes. And she has a strong connection.
She's also from Ferns.
Yeah, there you go. There are a lot of coincidences
today. Congratulations, Michael.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks very much, Roisin. Thank you.
Well done.
I think Roisin, it was written in the stars for Michael today. What with him going to the music we were talking about.
The thing is, I'm always screaming at the radio because I know the answer. Yes. But screaming at people get the wrong answer. I didn't get a single one.
Yeah, well, you can try again in a few months' time. We're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show. Keep cup and lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your pottering around. See you, Roisin. Bye now. Bye. Michael, well done.
Thanks very much, Ray. Thank you. Delighted.
So you're seven, a person of your choice. Fitzpatrick's Castle. There's no S in the middle there. Fitzpatrickcastle.com to see what's in store for you. Well done and enjoy it. Thanks, Michael.
Will do.
Good luck.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye, Ray. Bye-bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, as promised. Well done, everyone. When you hear that, it means summer's on the way. Is that a bit premature? Sorry about that. Now, those of you who are fans of the hit TV series Family Guy will certainly know of its creator, Hollywood actor, writer, comedian, producer, loads of different things. Seth MacFarlane. Well, some big news on this side of the water. Seth has just secured the rights to adapt a comic book series co-created by Irish artist Will Sliney, who we know very well on this show. And Will joins us from his hometown of Cork. It's all Cork for the last part of the show. Hello, Will.
Great, how are you?
Good to talk to you. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is big news, big news.
Yeah, it's quite exciting.
Yeah. So tell us about Shrouded College is the the umbrella name, is it?
Pretty much. It's a kind of a universe comic book that myself and my partner in this, Charles Soule, have been creating for the last little while. And, you know, we've spent so many years working on Spider-Man and Star Wars. And funnily enough, we don't own Spider-Man and Star Wars. So we figured we'd create a universe of our own.
And of course, everybody wants a new Marvel, don't they? Because it's just a billion-dollar industry now.
I think storytelling has changed. It's all interconnected now because, you know, the way we consume media is different. Whereas before, you know, 10 years ago, every episode would be a single episode and you'd wrap it up. Now it's all about these long stories that join together. And that's what we're doing in the comic book. And that's what people seem to be really resonating with at the moment.
Which means, of course, it's good news for you because if it takes off, it's around for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that seems to be the pattern with these things. It's coming from we're working with a company called Image Comics, and a lot of people might know The Walking Dead, but what you might not know is that that originated from a comic book as well. And this is the thing, like these things go out onto TV, they go out onto movies as well, but at the same time, we get to tell our story in the comic book as well. So it's lovely to see how these stories that just begin on pencil and paper can expand into all these different types of worlds.
Well, here's a big question then. Do you write the comics with a view to getting it on telly or on the big screen in cinemas, or do you just write it as a comic first?
There, it used to be a bad thing to say that if you weren't just dreaming about, you know, the art of the comic book, but I'd be lying if I wasn't dreaming about this. Yeah. We did a lot of things along the way to force people's hands if they were doing it. Like if you look at the very first page of the comic book, you can see an island from Ballycotton in there. So hopefully, if they have to film it, it'll make them come over here. So we had that in mind the whole time.
Yeah, and you're very much anchored in Cork. The family are there and you work from there.
Very much so, yeah, absolutely.
And that's the brilliant thing about animation and what you do, comics, you can do it from any place in the world.
Yeah, and it's always been one of the things that I'm very, very keen for young kids to know is that you can do this stuff from anywhere in the world. I love the idea of the way Marvel would have been in the 70s and the 80s. They had this bullpen where Stan Lee was inside there and they were all creating Spider-Man comics together. But now we're based all over the world and the only thing that's important is that you practice your art, you get good enough, and basically they'll find you and get you to work for them.
And in a country where we don't have many raw materials, so we can't be going off building cars or whatever. What we do have is a tradition of storytelling. And then, as you say, you can do the art. All you need is a pencil and a piece of paper. So animation is an industry that we should be encouraging and funding, and we should be, you know, world leaders in it.
Yeah, well, we really are, believe it or not. Like a lot of the companies, back in the day, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon back in the 80s and 90s was done here.
I was there. I was there. I went out to the wherever they did it, out in Cunningham Road, or was that something else?
There you go. Well, that was the seed of it all, and it has spread from there into so many massive companies. Of course, they're Oscar nominated now. We've had visual effects people in Richie. He's won his Oscar. But there are so many shows that are being made here. There's more animators per capita in Ireland than any other country in the world.
Is that a factory or are you just making it up?
No, it is. It is. Like, it goes back. Like, we're so well known for our storytelling in music, but it's always been there in drawing as well. Look at the Book of Kells. Yes. That was a great comic book back in the day.
The original. It was never made into a movie.
Too hard to adapt, I'd say, that one. So we'll have to get Seth on it.
Yeah, so did you actually get a call from Seth, or did his people call your people?
Oh, we got a call from them all. It was this big, crazy Hollywood bidding process, and it was just the most surreal experience of these real West Coast Americans telling you how much they love you when they're trying to buy into your stuff. And there was a lot of studios that really wanted it, and they all had different visions for how they were going to do it. And ultimately, we ended up with, you know, this big deal that Universal are a part of, Peacock are a part of, that's where it would air. And of course, Fuzzy Door then, which are Seth MacFarlane's production company, they'll be the wheels behind it all.
And is it, it's animation, not live action?
No, it's I can't say anything like that. But a lot of people, he's actually gone into live action a lot in the last little while. He has his Orville TV series, so it's up for grabs. I'm not too sure which way they'll be doing it. Well, I know, I just can't say.
You know. Right, okay. Well, I think by your reaction to me saying it was animation, it's going to be live action.
I didn't know this was investigative journalism.
No, just a good reader of the human condition. That's all. It's not investigative journalism. But on the animation thing, so this is big news. Across Spider-Man, across the Spider-Verse, which is the second animated Spider-Man, and you're heavily involved in that, are you? Or your work is?
A lot of the characters, I worked on Spider-Man for about 5 or 6 years, and I was very well known with a half-Irish Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2099. I worked on his books for about 5 years, and not to spoil the first movie, which came out many, many years ago, but as I was going in, my phone was hopping, it was going crazy, and I found out that he arrives right at the end. A few friends of mine are actually working on the movie, like I've been seeing what they've been doing for it, and it's just going to be this incredible explosion of Spider-Verse characters, which is the world that we created in the comic books about 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah. So, and it's a very, like, the first movie was incredible. So I can't wait to see where they go with it.
And then your Spider-Man 2099 with roots in Cork, he's going to appear, is he?
Yeah, he's been shown in the trailer. That one I can say. Definitely.
Will he have a Cork accent?
No, it's Oscar Isaac who's playing him. They're focusing on the Mexican side, which is fair enough. But we all know he's from Cork as well. So that's what's important.
Yeah. So you never have to grow up, Will Sliney.
I think that's part of my demeanor. I remember making a promise to myself when I was 13 that I'd stay playing with action figures all my life, and they're still surrounding me here.
Yeah, but you do have two children now, so you do have to be the adult in some situations.
I kind of worry because if they turn out like me, with me feeding all of that as well, like, there'll be no kind of end to it. No, like, they're already starting to tell little stories with the little toys and stuff that they have. It's just this amazing childhood imagination that we all should hold on to. It's such a fabulous thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And drawing is a thing we leave behind, don't we? Unless we're really good at it.
I think that people don't realize that it's a viable career, and there are these amazing art jobs out there. And when they hit 12 or 13 and they go into secondary school, and we all know how important all of these other subjects are, but I think it's really important for kids to know that there are so many incredible art jobs out there now that you can keep this up. And the beauty about drawing is that it's just practice. The more you draw, the better you get. So if you keep that up even on your own, which is essentially what I did, you know, you can get to a point where the biggest companies in the world will want you to draw for them.
Yeah, and that's where you're at. And then you get a phone call from Seth MacFarlane. He says, I want to make your graphic novel into a live action, maybe TV, maybe movies, we don't know. But so that's brilliant. So you're there at home. Have you got this amazing setup? Because even the sound sounds good, because we're speaking to you from your home. It sounds like you're in a studio.
Yeah, well, so everything has changed over the last few years with the because I was brought into Homeschool Hub. If you all remember yes. those days, I was brought in as the art teacher. Remember, we did some stuff back
yes,
in the day.
Yes, we did at the
Dawn.
Beginning. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing. And that spread out into, well, I was essentially offered my own show. And we're working on the second one right now. And a lot of it is animated. And I'm animating the characters. And I have to record myself, you know, for my own voice.
Yes.
So we've got a little temporary VO booth set up here to do that. And this is the thing, like, you can do so many things with art now, like the ability to animate, the ability to record your own shows can be done at home. And we'll start to really see that over the next few years
yeah.
of people just with their own motivations creating their own animated shows.
During lockdown, we did a stuff frame animation at home and put music to it and sound effects and everything. It was the best crack ever. Anyway, that's where we have to leave it. Will Sliney, congratulations.
Okay. Thank you.
Will Sliney's work coming to a big, small screen, animated live action near you very shortly. Thanks, Will. Cormac's on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. This is this one here.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.